Now, you guys all know that tomorrow is Memorial Day. It's the day that's the beginning of summer, the day that's almost the last day of school, the day where lots of things go on sale. It's a day of picnics and barbecues and parades. It's also a day that we set aside to remember and honor all the men and women who have died while they served in our military. So it's an odd holiday. It's both somber and delightful, both sort of fun and serious. And I don't know if you've noticed, but it's not so easy to do both at the same time. I mean, some of us prefer one over the other, usually the happier side. But truth is, life brings both. And often our hearts hold both. And somehow, we have to make sense of it all. Memorial Day gives us, as a nation, as a people, an opportunity to make sense of it together. We get a chance to think back and remember and knit those memories into a whole that has meaning. In this congregation, we have been practicing doing that for quite some time. On the last Sunday of every month, for years now, we've set aside time to honor the men and women who have died fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. And for those of you who are new, that whole wall back there with all those sheets of paper is the list of names that have been read in this room. And we'll do that again at the end of this service. Remembering the names is serious. And sometimes it makes some of us sad. And yet we've promised ourselves not to stop doing it till all the soldiers come home. Because what we remember, how we remember as a people, shapes who we are. So today, before we get to that moment of remembering the names, we all are going to think together a little bit about memory itself, with some beautiful music played by Erica Venable and Stephanie Nixdorf, and some lovely words read by Mike Bullard. We'll wonder together about what memory is. This is a time to conjure memories and a time to watch your minds remember. And for those of you who are used to going to Sunday school, well, sorry. There's no more Sunday school this year. And if you're feeling like maybe the words and the music will make you fidgety, there are, the ushers have them, some fun packs with things to do while the grown-ups remember. If you didn't get one on your way in, just raise your hand and one of the ushers will bring it over. We're going to start with a reading that is very famous. It was written by an author whose name was Valentin Louis Georges Eugène Marcel Proust.
Many years had elapsed during which nothing of Cambrai had any existence for me, when one day in winter on my return home, my mother, seeing that I was cold, offered me some tea, a thing I did not ordinarily take. I declined at first, and then for no particular reason changed my mind. She sent for one of those squat, plump little cakes called Petit Madeleine, which look as though they had been molded in the fluted valve of a scallop shell. And soon, mechanically, dispirited after a dreary day with the prospect of a depressing morrow, I raised to my lips a spoonful of the tea in which I had soaked a morsel of the cake. No sooner had the warm liquid mixed with the crumbs touched my palate than a shudder ran through me, and I stopped, intent upon the extraordinary thing that was happening to me. An exquisite pleasure had invaded my senses, something isolated, detached, with no suggestion of its origin. And at once the vicissitudes of life had become indifferent to me, its disasters innocuous, its brevity illusory. This new sensation having had on me the effect which love has of filling me with a precious essence, or rather this essence was not in me, it was me. I had ceased now to feel mediocre, contingent, mortal. Whence could it have come to me, this all-powerful joy? I sensed that it was connected with the taste of the tea and the cake, but that it infinitely transcended those savors. Whence did it come? What did it mean? How could I seize and apprehend it? I drink a second mouthful, in which I find nothing more than in the first. Then a third, which gives me rather less than the second. It is time to stop. The potion is losing its magic. It is plain that the truth I am seeking lies not in the cup, but in myself. I put down the cup and examine my own mind. It alone can discover the truth. And I begin to ask myself what it could have been, this unremembered state which brought with it no logical proof, but the indisputable evidence of its felicity, its reality, and in whose presence other states of consciousness melted and vanished. I decide to attempt to make it reappear. I retrace my thoughts to the moment at which I drank the first spoonful of tea. I rediscover the same state, illuminated by no fresh light. I ask my mind to make one further effort to bring back once more the fleeting sensation. And so that nothing may interrupt it in its course, I shut out every obstacle, every extraneous idea. I stop my ears and inhibit all attention against the sound from the next room. And then, feeling that my mind is tiring itself without having any success to report, I compel it for a change to enjoy the distraction which I have just denied it, to think of other things, to rest, refresh itself before making a final effort. And then, for the second time, I clear an empty space in front of it. I place in precision before my mind's eye the still recent taste of that first mouthful, and I feel something start within me, something that leaves its resting place and attempts to rise, something that has been embedded like an anchor at a great depth. I do not yet know what it is, but I can feel it mounting slowly. I can measure the resistance. I can hear the echo of great spaces traversed. And suddenly the memory revealed itself. The taste was that of the little piece of Madeleine which on Sunday mornings at Combray, when I went to say good morning to her in her bedroom, my Aunt Leone used to give to me, dipping it first in her own cup of tea.
I got a story to tell. This one is about a second grader named Paul. In September of a year not too long ago, he moved to a brand new town, and he started a new school with a new teacher and a new class and a brand new spanking desk. And on that first day of school, there was a boy sitting across from him with bright red hair, and his name was Ryan. Ryan told Paul a knock-knock joke. And he was really funny. So that first day was a very good day. The second day, three other boys came up to Paul, and he thought, oh, great, they're going to make friends with me too, just like Ryan. But that wasn't what happened. They came up and started poking Paul's backpack, and they started teasing him. Paul looked all around for Ryan, the kid he'd met the day before, but nobody was there. He was all alone. That second day wasn't a very good one. And the next day, that was even worse. Because those three same boys came up to Paul at lunchtime, and they called him names and then stole his lunch right there in front of everybody. Paul felt so embarrassed, he wished the earth would just swallow him up. And then he got to be hungry all afternoon long. It seemed to him that the other kids in the cafeteria didn't want to see or hear what was going on at all, as if they were all doing this. The next day, Paul didn't come to school at all. And the three boys were cheering because Paul wasn't there. Ryan overheard them in the boys' bathroom. He heard them laughing as they imagined all the other mean things they could do to Paul all year long. And that made Ryan remember. He remembered the year before when he was the new kid. He remembered all the times that people had made fun of him because of his bright red hair. He remembered when he'd been picked on and felt like everybody else was just doing this. And he didn't like how that memory made him feel at all. It stayed with him. Stayed with him through math class and during social studies and even in PE. He just couldn't forget that memory, couldn't shake it. It ruined his concentration. So much so that he didn't make one single basket in PE, and he was the best basketball player in the whole school. Coach noticed something was wrong, and at the end of the class, he just went over and said, "Hey, what's up, Ryan?" Ryan told him. Coach listened and said, "Boy, what you gonna do about that one?" On Friday, when Paul came back to school, the three boys were looking for him again. And as he went out into the yard for recess, they started following him. Ryan saw it and knew what was coming next. So he shouted out as loud as he could from where he was standing, "Hey, Paul, you promised to play baskets with me. Come on, the court's this way." Paul turned around and ran towards Ryan. And as they headed towards the court, Coach just happened to be walking by. He threw him a ball and kept on walking. That day was the best day of all, at least for Paul and Ryan, because that was the day those three boys stopped picking on them, and it was the day that Paul and Ryan became best friends. They still are 60 years later. I gotta tell you though, it wasn't the best day for the other three. Because from then on, Coach had them on his list of boys with energy to burn off. And Coach had a very powerful way of helping that come about. Today, we share our plate with Hospice by the Sea. This offering will go to their regatta, which some of our own UUFBR members have participated in. So much happens in our heads when we summon up remembrances of things past. Sometimes those memories just come. They appear kind of like Netflix movies you never ordered. And they just distract you from what you thought you meant to do. Or sometimes they appear and then lead you on a path of imagination and thought that is just a delight. Happens to me a lot when I listen to music. And you know, some memories are stubborn. They hide from us. They won't come at all, no matter how hard we look for them and try and find them. Like, what is it that's 6 times 8 on your multiplication test? Or what was that name? What was that woman's name? And the more we chase them, the further off they seem to be. But memory also heals. "But if the while I think on thee, dear friend, all losses are restored and sorrows end." And you know, sometimes when you're having a bad day, just remembering better times the people who know and believe in you, well, that's enough to give you the strength to get through whatever it is that was making the day so bad. And memory, especially when it is shared, tells us who we are. Think of those family stories that you both love to hear and to tell. I mean, there are some that feel like memories even though you weren't there when it happened or maybe hadn't even been born yet. I mean, like the time your uncle went to a fancy party on a really hot day in the summer, back when boys and men were expected to wear suits, coats, and ties, and knowing full well that at some point all of the moms would feel sorry for such a handsome young man, so hot in his coat, would tell him to take off his jacket and be more comfortable. Well, he'd cut his cuffs and the collar out of his shirt. The jacket came off, and their jaws dropped. And then everybody laughed. Family memories like that are ones we teach and practice, because they remind us who we are. Whether we feel like we remember too much or remember too little, it's the memories that we choose, the ones we practice, that can make all the difference in our lives. We human beings tend to become what we focus on. Stand in front of a basketball hoop and remember all the times you missed, and what do you think is going to happen when you throw that ball? Not the miracle you're hoping for. Remember every embarrassing moment that ever happened to you as you start something new, and you might just walk into the door, bang your nose, and embarrass yourself all over again. In situations like that, it might be better to practice a good memory instead. Or if you can't find one, think about something totally, completely different. You know what they say? The best way not to think of an elephant is to imagine a purple giraffe. And there are some things we don't even want as memories. When it comes to unpleasant or unhappy things, it's just plain old human to go like this, which really doesn't change anything out there in the world, but it does make life a little bit inconvenient, because it's kind of hard to eat cake or play music or have any fun when you're really just like this all the time. And sometimes you don't know how to get those fingers out of your ears. Sometimes it takes someone else who's been through it, and found a way out, to help you learn how. Someone who, by the look on the face or the words they use, says, "You can do it. You can handle it. You'll be okay." And because they're around, you do. You take your fingers out of your ears and you move on. In the story, Coach helped Ryan that way. And like Ryan discovered, some memories really do just grab hold and don't let go until they've changed us quite around. And that is a reason for hope. You see, we can, we do, use our memories to become our best selves. We can, we all do, use our memories to imagine and then make a better world.